Welcome to this podcast edition of KAZL Book Review, which airs every Sunday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. and every Monday from 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. on KAZI 88.7 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm the host, Hopeton Hay. We're going to be airing an interview I did with Timby Locke. She wrote a very moving memoir called From Scratch. She was born and raised in Houston, Texas. She is an actress living in Los Angeles. And it tells the story of the romance between her and her Sicilian husband, the obstacles they overcame, his family opposed the marriage. He was diagnosed with cancer, how she found a whole nother level of love in helping to take care of him and nurse him through the illness, and how her annual visits to Sicily each summer with her daughter, the way the community has embraced her and her daughter, has helped her to heal. And most importantly, her mother-in-law, the way her mother-in-law has embraced her, has helped her to heal from the death of her husband. Now, the book, From Scratch, was a New York Times bestseller and is also being made into a limited series on Netflix starring Zoe Saldana and also being produced by actress Reese Witherspoon. I hope you enjoy the interview. Timby Locke, welcome to KAZI Book Review.
Hello, Hopeton. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Timby, From Scratch has really had a profound effect on me. It's not that many books that I read in preparation for interviews that often have me almost had tears at multiple parts of the book. And one of the great things about this book is really the love story between you and your late husband, Saro, and the great barriers, cultural barriers, language barriers, family barriers that you overcame. And it's the kind of book that one could read and say it is possible to have that great love in your life.
That was definitely at the forefront of my mind when I finally felt ready to perhaps commit our story to the page and was thinking about what is the value of this one specific story, or, you know, what aspects of it are universal to all of us? And of course, I was asking myself as a widowed person, what was the meaning of all of that love, and where did it go, and where does it go? Or can it live? And that was can it live on? And that was an essential question that sort of drove me to write the book.
I think the other thing that was very informative about your book was to find just this whole nother level of love as you nursed your husband through his cancer, and how you were able to just really dig deep into yourself to find some additional depths of love maybe that you didn't know you had inside of you.
Absolutely right. One of the things that I think for both of us, and were he here, I imagine he would be able to tell his own story of that experience. But, you know, we had this beautiful, in some ways, aspects of it were sort of, you know, fairy tale romance and falling in love and coming together and had a rock solid, beautiful marriage. And then when he was diagnosed, as much as those people who, you know, readers and listeners know who've experienced illness, the kind of rupture that, you know, brings into one's life, you know, personally, professionally, you know, just at the level of psyche and soul, all of it. But in a marriage, it can do a lot of damage initially, because you have to find your footing in this new relation, in a new relationship to each other, individually to this big experience that you're having. And so for us, what I didn't know could happen and did happen is that our love grew deeper. That's not everyone's experience. Couples who go through, you know, a life-altering illness like this, but for us, what we saw was this: the way in which we, in order for us to be strengthened and to go forward and for me to support him, I had to know him in this new way. And we had to ask of each other to be present through some of the worst moments. And in that being present, we found this deeper, greater love. And so I say we kind of had these, you know, two love stories in a certain sense. One is, you know, the upstart and falling in love and meeting and all of that, which I write about in the book. And then over the 10 years, and he was ill for 10 years, over that 10-year period, you know, our marriage really deepened in a whole other way. And it was quite remarkable and one of the most honoring experiences of my life, and a gift, quite frankly. I don't say that his getting cancer was a gift, but the love that we were able to find through the course of that was a gift that will stay with me.
So you met in Florence, and you literally ran into him. and you were not looking. You were just having fun, hanging out in Florence, spending time there, spent up all your money, had run out of money. And you were just having fun. And he just relentlessly pursued you.
He did. He did. I didn't see it coming. I didn't know what was happening. I was 20 years old. I was too young to know anything about, you know, sort of, you know, a lifelong love, and I didn't, you know, certainly expect, you know, what was initially a semester abroad to turn into a year and then turn into a lifetime with someone. But yeah, we met, and he, you know, had, you know, he always talked about sort of when we met that he knew instantly, you know, it just was super clear to him. And I, you know, it was vaguely clear to me, but mostly I was, you know, still finding my way in my own development, let alone trying to sort of be with, you know, a life partner. But he really inducted me into the possibility of what could be and an us that could be.
All right, there was a boss move in there,
and tell me
the boss move. I've never heard of a young man courting a young woman by buying her a bicycle.
Bam. You were so right. You were so
I have that
right.
Was so like, whoa.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and a part of this, and this, I loved, you know, writing this part of the book because, one, it took me back to the beginning of our relationship, but also that time of my life when I was living in Florence as an, you know, an art history student, you know, an American person abroad, and, you know, Florence is a bike culture. I mean, people bicycle everywhere, and, you know, at the time I was living with an Italian family, and I was riding the bus a lot, and I hated riding the bus for many different reasons. And, you know, I just mentioned that in passing to him, and sure enough, he manifested. He said, here's a gift for you, and it was a bicycle. And it was life-changing in terms of the quality of my life in Florence, but it also, and then I write about this in the book, it told me that, one, he listened, two, that he saw a need I had, and he immediately stepped in to meet that need. And, you know, those of us who are, you know, people who are married or in deep relationships with friends, family, or, you know, a partner, know that people who can meet your needs in life, those are keepers. Those are keepers. So, yeah, the bike changed everything. And it was red with a basket and a bell.
And the rumor in the book was the bike may have been stolen.
Yeah, I know. So
He stole it, but it was.
No, he didn't. He acquired it through someone who possibly might have stolen it. But no, there's this whole sort of underground bike culture there was at the time in Florence where, you know, bikes would just, you know, turn up missing, and then you could just go. They weren't like bicycle shops on every corner. So if you wanted a bike, you knew people to go to in certain piazzas where you could just get a bike. And, you know, then you might see your bike later on someplace else, and then you might have to buy it back. And so when I asked him, I said, you know, well, let me, in my very Texas, you know, Southern upbringing, I was like, well, I can't accept this gift for you. Let me pay you for it. And he refused. And of course, in the course of that discussion, you know, he's, well, you know, I found it this way, and I thought, oh my God, what is happening here? But I have to say, it was like, it was a boss move, and it changed everything because it really put him on my radar in a deep way. And not that he wasn't already, because we were friends and we, you know, knew each other, but suddenly I saw him in a different light, and it was just beautiful.
Well, there was another boss move he made, which is he stood you up, and then he stood out in the rain for 3 hours waiting for you? Was it 3 hours in the rain? I mean, that's like a movie. And we're talking about someone who grew up in Sicily, who didn't see the movie as a reference, I'm sure, who just this dedication of making up and then cooked this incredible dinner for you and your friends.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there was so much, you know, his love language was very much in you know, there are people whose love languages, you know, is gifts. There's people whose love languages, you know, obviously cooking a good food or a gift or an experience. But for him, it was that constant, steadfast, I will show you what I'm made of. I will stand true to what I believe in. You can count on me. And at different stages throughout both the early courtship and, of course, over the course of our, you know, marriage, there were these moments where, for me, I knew this person was unwavering and I could count on them in any circumstance. And he demonstrated those things very early in our courtship. And you sort of, you know, as one, they are beautiful gestures. I mean, looking at a man standing out in the rain under, you know, in a piazza in Italy, you know, under a lamppost is just like, and waiting for you is just, you can't unring that bell.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hope Ten Hay. My guest is Timby Locke. We're talking about her memoir, From Scratch, A Memoir of Love, Sicily, and Finding Home. But there were obstacles to the love story. There were your parents. Your father decided to come to Sicily because he had to meet this sorrow when you decided to stay longer than a semester. And your mother, Shara, had some questions about cultural choices that you were making. So yeah. This wasn't just smooth sailing.
No, I mean, listen, I was 20 years old, abroad for the first time. You know, neither of my parents had ever had an experience like that in their young adulthood, and far away from home. And I remember I casually, you know, and at that time, you know, I might call them once every 7 days, maybe every 10, from a different country. So when we checked in, it was significant, right? And so, you know, I called my father one weekend on a, you know, a usual, you know, check-in, and I mentioned in casually just before I hung up the phone that, oh, I had met someone. And I think the paternal instincts in him knew instantly, I better get over there and see what the heck is going on. So yes, he came all the way to Florence, one under the guise of, well, you know, I need to see my daughter, I haven't seen her for a while, but I really think his true intention was, I need to lay eyes on whoever this person is, and I need to see this for myself, and if I need to intervene, I will, because I'm not going to, you know, lose my child to, you know, some sort of, you know, suave man in some other country. So nonetheless, he flew over, and it was, you know, in his full, as I write, you know, his full Texas regalia, you know, cowboy boots, the hat, all of it, which, you know, in Florence was such a sight the first time I saw my father in months. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's walking down, you know, he's passing the David in his full, you know, Texas regalia. It was quite the sight. But he met Sato, and, you know, it didn't take long for him to realize that he was not only, you know, an incredible person, but that he loved me deeply. So that was less of an obstacle. And then when my mother, when I mentioned to her that, you know, I was dating someone, for her thing was, well, you know, I you know, at the time it was like, what are you doing? There are some real cultural obstacles here, and maybe, you know, you need to sort of think about dating someone who is American, African American, you know, in the States, this feels too foreign, too other. And so there was a lot there, but they quickly sort of got moved past that. The bigger obstacle became his family.
Yeah, and I want to jump to that. Because yeah. Let's go ahead and jump forward, because you guys, he moved because he was a chef. So for him, he could be a chef anywhere. And he knew that for you to be an actress, you needed to be in New York or Los Angeles. So he moved. He came over to New York. You guys were living in New York. You got married. And at some point, you moved to Los Angeles. But the other part of the story is that the Sicilian culture, his father, as the patriarchy, very close, tight-knit family, was opposed to it. And you had to buy tickets to Sicily as a sort of a last effort to try to reconcile sorrow with his parents, because his father basically said, I have no son.
Yes, yes. It was, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do with the book is to not only as I take the reader over the course of this lifetime of love, but to also, with those highs, you know, illustrate and share those lows. And one of the low points was his family not coming to our wedding. We got married in Italy, in Florence, and they didn't come. And much of that had to do with, a father-son fracture that pre-existed me, but that got worse, and the sort of rift became deeper and greater when Sato chose to marry me. And for his father, it was sort of like the final straw in a long line of choices that he disagreed with his son. And I think the fact that Sato was choosing a life that was so very different than the small town, rural, agrarian, ancient culture that, you know, he had been born into. And his father just couldn't sort of wrap his mind around it. And quite frankly, thought that marrying an American, and to his father's eyes, all Americans divorce. Like, the idea of divorce is so central for him to being American that he was like, why? An American will only leave you. If I sanction and if I co-sign on this relationship, it's only going to blow up. You are too different. You're two different cultures. You know, she's an actress. All of this, it's too much. And so he simply said, I cannot co-sign on this. And so, yes, 2 years into our being married, I realized we couldn't go forward as a couple unless we really actually confronted this. And Sato needed to build a bridge, or we had to, you know, extend an olive branch to say, hey, let's try to have some minimum of connection here. And of course, they did come around. And that was very important because it set the groundwork for the way in which our relationship would deepen when the next thing, big obstacle we had in our life came, which was his illness.
Yes. Yes. If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Tembi Locke. We're talking about her new book, From Scratch, A Memoir of Love, Sicily, and Finding Home. So you and Sorrow decided to adopt a daughter while his cancer was in remission. And just jumping forward, the way you structured the book, I know you're bringing the ashes back to Sicily, as you promised to Sorrow that you would mm-hmm. do, to bring some of his ashes back to Sicily. And you and your daughter are surviving and finding comfort in each other, but the incredible grief of losing someone you love so much over a long period of time is just mm-hmm. such an integral part of this story, and how your family was so supportive. I mean, how can you survive without family?
No, I mean, that's one of the, it's one of the reasons why also I really wanted. You know, it's interesting. This book is very much about all the paradigms of love, and it begins with the sort of eros, the Greek romantic love of two people. But over the course of the book, is really about love of family, love, parent child love, love of place, love of food. It's all the different paradigms, and really by the end of the book, and as we move into those summers in Sicily, which the book is structured around, as I am beginning to try to find our way back with my daughter and begin a new relationship with my mother-in-law after Sato's passing, the book is also about that love story, the love story of these three people, myself, my daughter, my mother-in-law, as we try to rebuild and find a new connection in the wake of a great loss. And so, one of the things I really wanted to explore was this idea of all the ways love is in our lives at different parts and times and through different experiences in our lives, and how it can transmute and transform and expand and grow in all these beautiful and unexpected ways. And so, yes, that first summer when my daughter and I find ourselves in Sicily, there, on one level to deliver on a promise, a deathbed promise I'd made to my husband. But on another level, I was there because I was very much hoping that there was something that I might find on the island of Sicily that would begin to open up my life again and to ground me and to anchor my daughter and I. And that becomes a whole nother quest.
And by the end of the book, your daughter decides she's going to participate in this tradition of making tomato sauce from scratch in Sicily.
Yes.
And The food, I'm telling you, Timby, the food. And you have recipes at the end, the food, and just this knowing that. And it's not only that. One of the things you really bring home in the book is not simply just the food, because I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, mm-hmm. and so we're all into the food. But mm-hmm. what we're not into that you bring home is the part of the earth and the food, the connection of the earth, the soil, to the food in Sicily and how they make the food.
Yes, and that one of the beautiful things that I have reflected a lot upon since Otto's passing was, one, his having been a chef, but having been from a family of agrarian of farmers, effectively, his understanding of the ecosystem of the cycle from seed to soil to the plate, it was always a part of our lives, but it was in his death that I suddenly was faced with sort of really contemplating also how that applies to life, and seeding into the soil the things that will grow later and nourish you. And in Sicily, in certainly rural Sicily, the part that he is from, that chain from, I literally, like the cheese we eat in town, I can, I've met the sheep. when we eat a tomato, I know exactly where it came from. And so that the closeness to the earth is so much a part of the lived experience there that I had to write that in the book and use it to sort of talk about a larger conversation of how food and that connection to the earth is also is connected also to my loss experience. And so I very much tried, and that making that scene with my daughter when she agrees to come with me to make the tomato sauce, it was one of those moments that I'll never forget, because we were in the midst of an ancient tradition making something that was in the height of summer that would, be eaten, I knew, in the winter, because that's what they make the tomato sauce to eat in the winter. And, we had been a part of the growing of those tomatoes. It was just a beautiful, beautiful experience. And watching her little, at that time she was 9, do that was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I hope every reader gets a chance to go to Sicily and see how tomato sauce is made, because it's quite phenomenal.
And there are two other moments I want to mention in the book that you bring up. One is there's an accident with an American tourist, and they call your mother-in-law's house Nona because you're the only person that speaks English, and you go to mediate. And the typical American tourist just wants the person who hit him to sign some sort of statement, which he's refusing to sign. And you have to tell the American tourist, you need to just chill and stop trying to act as you're in America. This is not a tourist destination.
Yeah, it was actually an English tourist, but the idea is exactly the same. This idea that, he was on a holiday with his family and, had a fender bender, and he, I guess had not really purchased the full liability insurance with his rental car company. And so to his mind, he was like, well, I'm not at fault here. Please just sign this paper. And he was asking this of the gentleman in town. And, when I arrived on the scene, one, I had to sort of assess quickly what was happening, and also both take sides, but also act in with a kind of sense of neutrality, which is sort of odd. But I had to tell him, this is Sicily, and there's no way in hell anyone is going to sign this paper admitting fault to this. And you need to sort of, have some cultural fluency to see what's happening around you, bite the bullet, pay the fee, pay the deductible, and move along. And in the course of this conversation, as I was trying to, translating between two languages, trying to get him to do this, he finally sort of looked at me and was like, wait, how did you get here? Like, how is this black woman in the middle of this town, in the middle of, Sicily, how did you get here? And of course, I told him a bit of the story, but that was a moment when I knew that I was really a part of that community, because the community called upon me in a time of need. And that was and then the conversation I had with my mother-in-law when I returned to her house.
Yes.
Was really deep.
She says, did you side with Calogero? Kolodziro, because mm-hmm. others come and go, but we are here together.
Yeah, that was a deep, deep moment, because what she was saying is, you are a part of me, you are a part of the family, and two, I live here even when you go back to the States. And so that idea, that sort of code of conduct that, you know, is a part of small-town Sicilian life, of like, we look out for each other. And of course, I write a lot about it in the book, about the history of Sicily and the island being a place that has been invaded over centuries and centuries, and that idea that it has been as this sort of pass-through in the Mediterranean where conquerors have moved through. And so people who are indigenous to the island, who live there, often have a kind of reticence to strangers. But once you're pulled into the fold, as I have been, and I write about it in the book, you are then the one of us.
Right. Matter of fact, someone tells your father that, right? Your father comes to visit.
Yeah.
And you're walking down the street. You've gone to get your father to walk him back to the house. And I believe it was a man with a mule who tells your mm-hmm. father, she is one of us. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing moment in the book.
Yeah, I you know, what it has been, one of the beautiful gifts of my life has been to have my parents, right, in this place that is so meaningful to me, come and also be claimed. I mean, one of the things about the book that I was also really trying to communicate is that we are all bigger than any borders, any lines on a map. Our geography does not define who we are. And so here's my father from rural East Texas, that's where he's born, finds himself all the way, you know, in Sicily, and he's talking to a man who speaks Sicilian. My father speaks no Sicilian. I'm translating, and yet the message there was, we are all one.
Yeah, but your father speaks Portuguese.
Oh, of course he does. Yes, of course he does. He's homemade, made up Portuguese, which, you know, is hilarious. The funny thing that my dad walked through the town, he said, well, how do I say my name in Italian? I'm like, well, Dad, your name's Gene. And he's like, you can just say Gene. He's like, no, I need, what's my Italian name? And so he's like, Gino. I'm Gino. Of course. So my dad's walking through, you know, these towns, Sicily, like, ciao, Gino. And I have to say, hilarious, absurd, and also completely endearing.
Well, I think the best way to close the interview is to share with the listeners that it was a pick of the month from Reese's Book Club,
yes.
Reese Witherspoon, and now it is being made into a miniseries on Netflix with your daughter, your sister, mm-hmm. Attica Locke, as the showrunner. What an amazing way for this book to continue its evolution.
Oh my gosh, Hopeton, it is beyond my wildest dreams. I'm completely honored and in so much gratitude, and I hope that Sato is honored and is smiling from the heavens, and it's going to be very exciting to bring Sicily to life on screen.
Timby Locke, author of From Scratch, A Memoir of Love, Sicily, and Finding Home. Her website is timbylocke.com. That's T-E-M-B-I, Locke, L-O-C-K-E, timbylocke.com. Thanks for being a guest on KAZI Book Review.
Hopeton, it has been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for this great interview.
Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. Be sure to like my Facebook page entitled KAZI Book Review, and my Twitter handle is @KAZIBooks, and my Instagram handle is KAZI_book_review. Have a great day.